It's been about a week and a half now since the end of Days of Unleavened Bread, a couple weeks since Passover and all those different things. And so now we're kind of on the count towards Pentecost. Then after Pentecost, the summer will hit. And like I said, we've already started thinking about the feast. And within a few months, we'll be the Feast of Trumpets, Day of Atonement, and then we'll be at the feast. And then we start the cycle all over again, right? And it's a cycle that God has given us for a reason. And that is because God knows that we get easily distracted. God knows that we need to be reminded, and God knows that we need to be, most importantly, reminded of what's really important. And we know that the holy days, they focus us on the future. They focus us on God's kingdom and being in his family, right? And that is the most important thing. That's what our thoughts should be on. That's what our mindset should be on. It should be on the future. It should be on God's kingdom and being in his family. That should really be the most important thing in our life. I mean, it's the reason why we do what we do. It's the reason why we try to live by this book. It's the reason why we're here today and not necessarily somewhere tomorrow, at church service tomorrow, because we're trying to live by this book because we want to be in God's family. We want to be in his kingdom. And so the holy days, they provide us that opportunity to refocus on that and not to become as distracted. And hopefully after this time of year, after you've went through the first part of the spring holy days, hopefully you feel closer to God. Because there's times in our life where we don't feel close to God, where we feel isolated. Hopefully as we go through these times that brings us closer to God and we feel closer to him. And we feel like our relationship with him is better now than it was before the holy days. Hopefully that's how we feel, because there's times where we don't necessarily feel that way. And so hopefully, as we're going through the spring holy days, we're feeling closer to God, we're feeling that relationship, we're feeling like we're on the right track. But again, at the end of the day, right, God really wants to know if we're willing to follow him, right? God wants to know, are we truly wanting to be in his family? Do we really want to be in his kingdom? And if so, are we living the life that reflects that? That's what God is most interested in when it comes to our life. And many times God will allow things to happen in our life, and sometimes he puts things into our life in order for him to see if we are really willing to do whatever it takes to be in his family. Our lives aren't always easy. There's ups, there's downs, there's good times, there's times of trials. And a lot of times God, again, allows these things to happen so he can see if we're really willing to do everything that it takes or whatever it takes to be in his family. Because God knows that it's very easy for us to say one thing and do another, right? That's human nature. It's easy to say something and then do the opposite. Let's go to Matthew 7 as we work in here, as we work the introduction here to the message. Matthew 7, Jesus talks about this. If you want to, you can put a bookmark in Matthew 5, 6, and 7. We're going to read several verses in the Sermon on the Mount today, so might mark this area. But in Matthew chapter 7, Jesus is teaching, and he says something that's very important. He says, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven." So it's not about the knowledge. It's not about just saying, well, yeah, I believe in God. You know, I believe that Jesus died for me. It's more than that. There's actions that have to come along with that. And that Jesus says, this is what the Father is looking for. He's looking for those that actually live this way of life. And verse 22 continues, says, "Many will say to me in that day, 'Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" And I've always been, you know, these verses have always interested me, because it's like, it's basically saying, it's like there's going to be people, and hopefully this doesn't apply to us in this room, but there will be people that will say the right things, know the right things, and maybe even do some really good things. But Jesus says whenever he returns, and as people are entering into God's family and kingdom, Jesus is going to say, "But I don't know who you are. Yeah, you did some of these things, but you and who you were was opposite of what the Father wanted. The Father wants righteousness. The Father wants people who follow his laws and his will, and you didn't do that, despite the fact that you had, you know, a decent little resume of different things going on." So we know that how we live our lives is extremely important to God. We also know that in this world, the country we live in, the times that we live in right now, we know that it's becoming increasingly more difficult to live God's way of life. It's just the facts. The vast majority of people that we come in contact with each and every day, whether it's at school, work, neighborhood, grocery store, whatever it may be, the vast majority of people that we see every day live by a set of principles and standards that are almost 100% opposite of what we believe. And that just, again, that's just the way it is. It used to not be that way. I was thinking about when I was a kid, when I was in school, when I was a teenager. Obviously, growing up in the church, I had different beliefs than most of my friends. But there were still things that we could always agree on. There was still a basic understanding and principle of Christian beliefs, right? Most of my friends didn't think it was okay to steal or lie. Most of my friends, we could all agree on the difference between a male and a female. We didn't have any confusion on that. We had basic understanding of things, even though they thought I was crazy because I went to church on Saturday. They thought I was crazy because I didn't eat pork. You know, they thought I was weird because, you know, fill in the blanks, right? But there was still this basic underlying of we believe in God and Christian principles. That's not the case anymore. That's a gigantic difference. That's a gigantic difference in the world that young people live in now versus whenever we were younger. And even if we're not as young, we still live in the same world and we still face these same things. Barna did a survey here in the last 12 months. I thought it was very interesting. He said that only 16% of Americans hold a biblical worldview, which means only 16% of Americans actually believe this book, right? There's more that'll go to church and more that say that they're a Christian, but they don't actually believe this book is the way to live. Only 16%. Millennials, so just curious, how many of you were born between 1980 and 1996 in this room, right? Your counterparts, there's only 4% that have a biblical worldview, 4%. So like I said, there is a good chance that when you're going about your day, school, work, wherever, you will not run into anyone else who thinks like you do. So we could spend time talking about that today, but we're actually not, because it doesn't change anything. We all know that, right? Well, today what we're going to actually talk about is we're going to talk about a time several thousand years ago when things were even worse, when 16% and 4% would have been awesome if that would have been the numbers. Let's go to Genesis chapter 6. Genesis chapter 6. And if you saw the title today, Build a Boat, maybe you were thinking maybe this is where we're going, because we're going to talk about Noah today. Genesis chapter 6. All right, it's all the way to the beginning. Here we go. Genesis 6, and let's start in verse 5. Think about this. It says, "Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. So the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping thing and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord." There was a time on the earth where there was only one man who truly was trying to follow God. We know his family got to go along, but in this verse it says Noah. One man in the entire world that was willing to follow God. One man in the entire world who was willing to be different, who was willing to stand out, who was willing to go against the culture and the society. That was a bad time. Look around the room, right? There's not just one of us here. I'm not the only one here today. This time is not as bad as when Noah was walking around. And it was so bad that, again, think about this too. It was so bad that God said, the only way to solve this is I got to start over. It is so bad. It is so out of control. These people's minds are so opposite of me. I've got to start over. Except for this one guy, Noah. And it says God showed grace to Noah. Noah wasn't perfect, but Noah's heart was going the right way, and God showed grace to him and kept him. Today, I want us to talk about and review the story of Noah. I think it's a very valuable story. I think it teaches us a lot of lessons. And here's the thing, and I appreciate Kami and Luke doing that this morning, because I think there's stories in the Bible that we just kind of plug in as like, oh, those are kids' stories. And we think, I grew up in the church. One of the first stories, I mean, my parents, I mean, we would hear, I remember Noah and Jonah and Daniel in the lion's den. And when Avery and Joe were little, the same first stories we told them. So we kind of think of them as kids' stories. But in reality, as we go through this, these lessons, Noah, Esther, Jonah, Daniel, all these, they're so valuable to us. Noah, as we go through this, gives us the blueprint for what it looks like to live a kingdom-focused life in a world that is out of control, in a world that mocks the idea that God even exists. That's the world that Noah lived in. And so as we go through this, Noah's life gives us the blueprint of, well, how am I supposed to be living my life? How can I be a Noah in my world that I'm in now? And again, Noah's world was much worse than ours. So that's what we're going to talk about today. That's what we're going to look at. And again, as we go through the story today, we're going to continue to come back to this analogy that Noah isn't the only person that God is asking to build a boat. And that comes in where the title comes into. As we go through this, God is asking each of us to spiritually build a boat. Each of us have a boat to be building in our life that God is expecting. And we're going to talk about that as we go through this story today of Noah physically building a boat and the spiritual analogy that God is teaching us through this lesson. Okay, so let's get going here. So we're in Genesis 6. Let's keep going. I'm going to, beginning in verse 13, and I'm in New Living Translation. I'm going to read from verses 13 through 22. So here's the story. Just as a refresher. So God said to Noah, I've decided to destroy all living things, for they have filled the earth with violence. Yes, I will wipe them out. I will wipe all out along with the earth. Build a large boat from cypress wood and waterproof it with tar inside and out. Then construct decks and stalls throughout its interior. Make the boat 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, 45 feet high. Leave an 18-inch opening below the roof all the way around the boat. Put the door on the side. Build three decks inside the boat, a lower, middle, and upper. Look, I am about to cover the earth with a flood that will destroy every living thing that breathes. Everything on earth will die. But I will confirm my covenant with you. So enter the boat, you and your wife and your sons and their wives. Bring a pair of every kind of animal, a male and a female, into the boat with you to keep them alive during the flood. Pairs of every kind of bird, every kind of animal, every kind of small animal that scurries along the ground will come to you to be kept alive. And be sure to take on board enough food for your family and for all the animals. So Noah did everything exactly as God had commanded. We've heard this story a million times. We read the story. Have we ever thought about this story? Have we ever thought about what God asked Noah to do, and what Noah's thoughts would have been? Have we thought about how much faith and how much courage Noah had to have to obey God and build a boat? I don't think we think about that. Let's think about a couple of things. Do you know that there was what had to be going through Noah's mind, right? God is giving him these instructions to build this boat, to do all these things. And Noah is sitting there thinking, what is rain? What is a flood? What is a boat? What does it do? It had never rained. It had never been a flood. Genesis 2. Let's go to Genesis 2 and let's read where it talks about before the flood, how God watered the earth, how things worked. Remember, before the flood, people were living to be 1,000 years old. The climate was completely different. God had protected the earth with all the water, and the atmosphere was completely different. The sun's rays, the damaging rays, didn't come through. It was a completely different planet. And here's a piece of it right here in Genesis 2 where we get the answer. Genesis 2, beginning in verse 4. Beginning in verse 4, Genesis 2 says, "This is the history of the heavens and the earth when they were created. In the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heavens, before any plant of the field was in the earth, and before any herb of the field had grown. For the Lord God had not caused it to rain on the earth, and there was no man to till the ground, but a mist went up from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground." And then shortly after this, God creates Adam and Eve. It was a different world. God had the perfect world, right? Any of you, out in Lubbock, obviously cotton farming is gigantic. And the farmers that have the funds and the monetary to do it, they don't irrigate anymore the old way from the sprinkler pivots. You'll see a ton of them. But those that can, they put underground irrigation in. Because the best way to water a plant is from root up. Evaporation. Thank you, Betsy. Very limited evaporation. It's just a better way of doing things. That's how God had set the earth up. God watered the plants and the vegetation from the roots up. Again, don't know 100% for sure, but there is a very good likelihood that, again, Noah did not know what rain was. It had never been a flood. Maybe there were lakes, rivers, I don't know. It may have never been a boat. And God is saying, I want you to go build this massive thing because this event that you don't know was going to happen is going to happen, and I need you to commit your life to it. That's what God asked Noah to do. Hebrews, let's go to Hebrews. Again, Mark, Genesis, Mark, Matthew, and then now let's flip over to Hebrews real quick. Let's see this where, again, we're Hebrews 11, which is the faith chapter, where Noah is mentioned, and again, kind of confirming this, what he had to do, what his mindset was. Hebrews 11, verse 7. Hebrews 11, verse 7. It says, "By faith, Noah," it took faith, "being divinely warned of things not yet seen," he had not seen any of this happen, "moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith." He's listed among the faithful because it took immense faith and courage to do what God had asked him to. That leads us to the question that we ask ourselves. Well, how strong is my faith? Is my faith strong enough to do things that God is asking me to do that I don't know how it's going to turn out, that I may not even understand right now, but I know God's asking me to do it? Am I willing to build that boat? That's what the story of Noah means to us. And we're at a big advantage. Again, right, we've kind of talked about, right, Noah just had tremendous faith, right? He didn't know how this was going to end. Again, he didn't know anything. We have this entire book. We know how everything ends. We know God's plan backwards and forwards. We know that Jesus has already come. He died for us. We know everything. We just have to go do it. We just have to build the boat. We know the details. So we're at an advantage. Yet Noah had tremendous faith. Tremendous faith. Do we have that same faith? Do we have the faith in our life where we can go build our boat? And again, everyone in this room, your boat is different than the person who's next to you. Stage of life. Some of you have already built many boats in your life. And maybe God's still asking you to build another one. Some of you have never built a boat, but you know God's kind of saying you need to kind of start building a boat. And then everything in between. So that was the first. Think about it. Like I said, tremendous faith. You know, this took years for Noah to accomplish. Again, some of this we don't know for sure, but different commentaries. Anywhere between 20 and 60 years is what I saw. 20 to 60 years to build this boat. It wasn't just a weekend project, right? It wasn't just some like little kid, he went out and put it together and now we're floating. This became who he was. This boat defined who Noah was. It defined his priorities in life. It defined again, it defined who he was. He was known as the guy who was building a boat, right? He was that guy. And most importantly, in the lesson for us, is it required him to stand out. No one else was building a boat. He was the only one. He stood out like a sore thumb, right? There was no way to hide the fact this is a gigantic, what, 450 feet, 75. He couldn't kind of put it, you know, hide it, you know, behind a tablecloth or something. Everyone knew what he was doing. It became who he was. Our boat has to be who we are. It has to define who we are. Our walk with Jesus Christ, the faith that we have in the Father, the fact that we want to be in God's family, in his kingdom, it has to define who we are. It has to be our boat. What do you think Noah's neighbors, his family, friends, what do you think they thought of Noah? Well, I think probably most of them thought he was kind of crazy. He'd lost it, right? Again, if we're going on the principle that it's never rained, and Noah's saying, hey, God's not happy. God's told me I got to build this because he's going to send a flood. His neighbors, his co-workers, they're like, flood, you're crazy. That word doesn't even exist. What does that mean? You're crazy, Noah. You've lost your mind. I suspect they also thought Noah was very judgmental, hateful, condemning. They were sick and tired of hearing about his God and the rules and how they were wrong. I bet that happened. It happens now. Definitely happened then. Because Noah, being a loving person, he had family. He had more than just a wife and a few kids. They lived to 1,000 years old. He probably had a great-great-great-great-grandmother living. You don't think he went and told her, warned her? We're tired of hearing about your rules and your God, Noah. Stop judging us. Yet he kept building the boat. Every day Noah had to decide when he got up, what was more important? Building the boat, obeying God, or just fitting in? Fitting in, not standing out. I just want to be liked. I just want to have friends. I just want to be normal. Every morning, Noah had to think through this. And every day he went out and he kept building the boat. He kept building the boat. You know, the amount of courage and faith that Noah had, it's remarkable. The decisions that he made not to fit into the culture of his world, to be different, to stand out. That is so hard. That is so hard to do. You know, Jesus said we're to be salt, right? We're to be different. We're to stand out. I was thinking of this story. You know, salt is very sneaky. Right? Because you really can't see it, but when you can taste it when you get a large amount. Avery loves salt. Once, you know, some of her health problems, one of the things is she actually needs and craves a lot of salt. So every once in a while, I'll make a mistake of accidentally coming in behind her and maybe picking up, you know, she's already salted the eggs or salted the chips, and I'll come in after that not knowing, take a bite, and it's like, wow, I mean, you just get hit with that all that salt. You didn't see it, but it was different. Like as soon as you get it on your tongue, you know it's there and it's different. It stands out. Jesus says, we're supposed to be salt. We're supposed to be salt. We're supposed to be so different that there's no way of hiding the fact that we're around. We're that different. We stand out that much. And that's so hard. It's so hard to stand out, to willingly stand out. It's so much easier just to blend in. Oh, I know that's not exactly right, but man, I don't want to stand out. I won't say anything. I'll just see if I can kind of maneuver through here. That's what's easy. That's what our human nature tells us to do. That's not what Noah did. That's not what God is asking us to do. Let's go to John 12. You know, obeying God, building a boat, if we're going to continue to use that analogy, it's never been popular. It's never been popular, and it's definitely never been easy. Let's go to John 12. Let's read another verse that has always, it amazes me. It's, it, John 12 and verse 42. John 12, verse 42. This is only found in John, but it's very interesting. It says, nevertheless, again, verse 42 of John chapter 12. Nevertheless, even among the rulers, many believed in him. Speaking of Jesus. But because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. For they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God. There were people that saw Jesus, saw his miracles, saw the things that he did, and pretty much were like, yeah, I think he's the Messiah. But they wouldn't say anything because they didn't want to stand out. They didn't want to give up the friends they had. They didn't want to give up any of the kind of prestige that they had. Again, this is the Messiah. The Jews have been waiting forever for the Messiah. People actually think, I think he's the Messiah, but I'm not going to say anything because I just don't want to stand out. It's not the cool thing to do. The Pharisees, then they'll put me and my family away that quick. And they didn't say anything about the Messiah. Matthew 5. Matthew 5, back to the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus says that it's okay to be different. It's okay to stand out, and that it's well worth it. Matthew 5 and verse 11 is where we'll start. Matthew 5, verse 11. Again, it's okay to stand out. Why? Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Jesus says, it's okay to be different. It's okay to be persecuted. It's okay to go build that boat and stand out, because great is your reward. And by the way, it's happened to everyone else. You're not different. It happened to Jesus. He was immensely persecuted. He was murdered by his fellow countrymen. Most of the disciples were murdered by their own people. The prophets, right, were treated horribly by their own people because they were building the boat that God had asked them to build. And when you do what God wants you to do, a lot of people are not going to be happy with you. And that's just the way it's always been. I think it's funny. I do this. You know, I know all the examples in the Bible. You know, I see the examples of prophets. I see all the examples of people being treated horribly. Yet in my mind, I'm like, well, it's going to be different in my situation. God's not going to make me have to do that. Or I can still walk that kind of fine line. I can, at work or school or whatever, I can walk that tightrope. No one else has ever done it in the history of mankind, but I can do it. It'll be different. Have any of you ever do that? It's not different. It doesn't work. You have to eventually choose one way or another. Jesus says it's a narrow gate. He said it was a small flock. Why? Because it's hard. If it was easy, everyone would do it, right? Simple as that. It's not. It's not easy. It's not easy to live this way of life. It's not easy to have the focus being not now, but on the future. It's not easy to build a boat. It's not. It's hard. But Jesus says it's worth it. It's worth it. Because forever in God's family is worth everything. There's nothing on this life that can match that. But we, as humans, we forget that. Noah, he didn't forget that. He didn't forget. Back to Noah. So he builds the boat. He does all this. But that was only the first step. That was only the first step. Let's go back to Genesis. And I didn't put my mark there. So let's go. Now we're in 7. So let me flip back. So now we're in Genesis 7. So years and decades go by. God says, get in the boat. The animals have come in verse 11. Genesis 7 and verse 11. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, on that day all the fountains of the great deep were broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened, and the rain was on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. All this water that God had had in the canopy and underground, and like I said, everything that made the earth totally different than it is now, all that water, everything came crashing down. Noah had to go through that flood. It had to be a terrifying experience. Think of the waves, the wind, the lightning, the thunder that they'd never seen. They know God's angry. Everything, they don't see land anymore. They know that everyone they've ever known is gone. Everything they've ever had is gone. They have no idea what is going on. They are having to go through this experience in that boat. In that boat that he had built. The most difficult part of Noah's journey, the most difficult part of his life of building the boat, happened in that boat, in that flood. If it was me, there'd be 1,000 things going in my mind, right? Did I build this boat? Is it strong? Is it seaworthy? Betsy would be like, absolutely not did Matthew build a boat that was seaworthy and strong. Matthew's, you know, I have talents, but building some stuff's probably not one of them, right? I would be like, I don't know what pitch was. Did I put enough on? Did I get the right nails? Noah's going through all these things. Everything is, his life is dependent on this boat. And he's going through this storm, 40 days and 40 nights of it, relentless, nothing stopping. Matthew 7. Jesus told us that, again, we are going to go through storms in our life. Matthew 7. And Jesus says, and using our language today, make sure you build the boat the correct way. Make sure the boat is built with me as the foundation. Matthew 7, verse 24. Matthew 7, verse 24, Jesus says, therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on the house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. Our boat must be founded on the rock. It must be founded and on Jesus Christ. As simple as that. And notice what Jesus says. He says the storm is coming. I always thought, why does the storm have to come? Why couldn't you just say, hey, you're going to have this nice beach house, and it's always going to be a pretty day, and it'll be like Hawaii. There's rainbows every day, and just the weather, perfect weather. No storms. Just follow me, believe in me. No storms. He doesn't say that. He goes, here comes the storms. We're going to have storms. I think culturally we see in this world that there is a storm coming. The storm may already be here. It may already be sprinkling a little bit. The winds are picking up. Maybe we hear thunder in the distance. If you're not in a storm, it's coming. It's coming. Is your boat ready? Is your boat ready? Are you spiritually strong enough to battle through the storms? If your boat's not ready, work on it. I think we all have things we can do on our boat. I suspect none of our boats are ready yet. But we have time. However much time that is, we need to be working on our boat. We need to be fixing the holes that we see. You know, Noah built, again, he built the boat. He got through the storm, and he got to the other side. Let's go to Genesis 9. Once he obeyed God, he had faith in God, he trusted God, and then he went through the storms. He went through that. He came out on the other side, and God created this special, unique relationship with him. And that's what God does for us. God has a unique, special relationship with us. And in Genesis 9, we see how that looked for Noah and the example that it sets for us. Genesis 9, beginning in verse 9. Genesis 9, beginning in verse 9. And as for me, behold, I establish my covenant with you, this is God talking, and with your descendants after you. That's us. Verse 12. And God said, this is the sign of the covenant, which I make between me and you, and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I set my rainbow in the cloud, and it shall be for the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. God created that relationship with Noah. He made a covenant with him. After he obeyed him, after he got through that storm, God said, hey, I'm still here. Our relationship is better than ever. I'm always going to be here for you. And that's what God has done for us. That's why Jesus came to die for us, so that we could have that relationship, so that we could be in God's family. We could be in his kingdom. I mean, what would have happened to Noah if he wouldn't have obeyed God? What if Noah would have just said, it's just too much. God, you're just asking too much. What would happen to Noah and his family? They wouldn't have survived the flood. But you know, who really built the boat, though? We thought about this. Who really, Noah did the physical work. Noah and his sons and whoever else that he hired to go along, he did the physical work, but Noah wasn't alone building the boat. God was with Noah every step of the way as he built the boat. God was the architect. God gave him the details, right? He said, build it exactly this dimension. Use this wood. Use this supplies. He said, go find these animals. He actually brought the animals to him, right? God said, hey, it's time. Get in the boat. I'll shut the door for you. God was there with him the whole time. Noah was never alone. He was never alone. I think sometimes we feel alone when we're building our boat, when we're in a storm. We feel alone. We're never alone. We're never alone. God is always there with us. We have to have faith. We have to show courage. We have to do the work. Noah did those things, but he was not alone. He was not alone. Noah did not ever make excuses. He probably had his days. His wife was probably tired of hearing him talk about the boat and, man, this is hard and all that. And so he had his times, but he kept working. He didn't make excuses. Sometimes I feel like it's very easy in our culture and our world that we can make excuses. Well, it's not the right time to build the boat. Well, the materials aren't, you know, they're on back order, right? Supply chain issues, whatever it is, right? We make excuses. Noah didn't make excuses. He just trusted and he went and he built the boat. Again, in a world that was more evil than the world we live in, where he was literally the only one. And again, God gave him all the plans. In our life, God has given us all the plans, right? Every plan right here. We're not in the dark in this. We know the plans. We know what kind of boat he wants us to build. We know everything. We just have to go out and do it. What God is looking for, he wants to know, are we willing on our own to stand out and be different? That's what building a boat is all about. Are we willing to stand out and be different? That is Noah. That's what he did. Are we willing to do that? What are we going to do with the plans that God has given us? We all have this information in our head. Are we using it? That's what God is asking. That's what God is looking for in our life. You know, the story of Noah is, like I said, I think it's very relevant. Very, very relevant to our lives now. Because Noah was asked to do something that required tremendous faith. And he chose to build a boat when everyone around him thought it was ridiculous. Thought he was crazy. But again, I go back. What would have happened to Noah if he didn't obey God? I think we know. The result would not have been good. He would have been punished along with everyone else. Well, we need to ask ourselves that same question. What will happen to me if I don't get busy building that boat that God has asked me to build? what will happen to me? We still have the opportunity to build that boat. Again, like I said, if you know you still have work to do, you have time, but get building, right? If you've built many boats in your life, share that information with someone building their first boat. Help them build that boat. Follow Noah's example. At the end, like I said at the very beginning, it really comes down to the fact that how bad do we want to be in God's family? That's really what this whole life comes down to. How bad do we really want to be in his family? Do we want it bad enough that we will give up everything that this world is offering? All of the exciting things? All the promises that the world makes? Are we willing to give that up to be in his family? Are we willing to stand out? Are we willing to be different? Are we willing to be made fun of? To be persecuted for? All to make God happy. All to follow in Christ's footsteps. If the answer is yes, then it's time to build a boat.